Kibbutz Be'eri is paradise. Absolute paradise. On the 7th, you could hear gunfire. You could smell houses burning. Your mind went ballistic that day. It went into overdrive. There was a slaughter. They came to slaughter.
Israeli national flags flying near the remains of dilapidated buildings. In handheld footage, a group of Hamas fighters on motorcycles. Someone asks, "Hassan, where's your bike?" Then someone else says, "Say your last prayers, guys." A man grips a weapon as he rides on the back of a motorbike through Gaza. As the fighters make their way across the desert and through a gap in a fence into Israel, a man shouts, keep moving, take it steady. Go straight for 3 kilometers. Come on. God bless you.
Sunrise, Saturday, October the 7th, 2023. Hamas fighters launch a surprise attack on Israel.
Heavy artillery fire.
They smash through Israel's high-tech border fence in more than 50 places.
Fighters driving through Israel fire their guns and shout, "Fire, fire, go wild, go wild."
As the attack unfolds, several thousand gunmen strike Israeli villages and military outposts.
A man screams, "Get out of the way." 2 dead bodies in the middle of the road.
They kill more than 1,100 people and take 250 hostages back to Gaza. Their main targets are small civilian communes close to the Gaza border, known as kibbutzes.
Handheld footage of Hamas fighters storming a kibbutz and discharging their weapons. The kibbutzes on the Gaza border are highlighted on an animated map.
The kibbutz which suffered the highest death toll on October 7th is Kibbutz Be'eri, 50 miles from Tel Aviv and 3 miles from Gaza. This is an account of what happened there on October the 7th, told by some of those who survived.
Gliding over the ravaged kibbutz after the attack, one day in October. Tom, print worker.
I'm from Kibbutz Be'eri. When I came, 1992, Kibbutz Be'eri was one of the more successful kibbutzes. We're very secular. It's a socialist structure, a community of people working for the common good for each other. It's a fantastic concept.
Kibbutz Be'eri was founded at the end of World War II by Jewish immigrants from Europe and the Middle East. It was one of 11 new settlements in the Negev Desert, established to enlarge the borders of the future state of Israel. At Kibbutz Be'eri, they set up a farm and a printing press. Assets and profits are shared between all members of the community.
Everyone earns the same, from the CEO of the print, we make a lot of money in the print, to the person in the laundry folding clothes. We all get exactly the same salary. We don't have a worry in the world. We didn't used to have any worries in the world, apart from the missiles coming over regularly. If I look out my back door, we can see Gaza. A missile can come from any direction there. When things were getting worse over the years with the missiles, with the Hamas, the government decided to build every apartment with its own bomb shelter. That was a great, great comfort. Living in Be'eri for 30 years, you get used to seeing the army all over the damn place. There was always a massive army presence there, so you felt safe and secure.
On the other side of a tall barbed wire fence, a flatbed truck drives past carrying a tank. Tom's house in the kibbutz.
The 6th was a Friday. My daughter Emily came up and said, "Is it okay if I go and play with Hila?" and then sleep at Hillel's. And me as a 64-year-old father of a young child, yes, definitely, I get a night off.
Kibbutz Be'eri measures just half a mile from end to end. Emily's friend Hila lives a couple of minutes' walk away at house number 83.
Emily, we watched The Vampire Diaries on TV. Hila, we wanted to have fun and stay up all night. Emily, I fell asleep around 2 a.m. In security footage, a four-legged creature ducks under the kibbutz's closed and barred metal gate and gallops off into the night. Saturday, October 7th.
At 5 a.m., as usual on a Saturday, the night watchman goes home, leaving Kibbutz Be'eri's main gate unguarded.
A crowd dances inside a tent.
A mile and a half from Kibbutz Be'eri, 3,000 young Israelis are wide awake.
Mobile phone footage of revelers at the Nova Dance Festival.
As dawn breaks, a barrage of missiles from Gaza.
People running and driving away.
Festival goers scatter.
The clear blue sky is streaked with long white vapor trails from the missiles.
Some head north towards Kibbutz Be'eri.
In CCTV footage, a long line of cars drives past the kibbutz. We were asleep. It was Saturday, lying-in day. At 6:30, we were woken up by the noise. An empty living room. Nirit, kibbutz nurse. The whole house shook, the windows shook. Gaza was firing rockets again, but this time it felt different. Loads of rockets and explosions. This wasn't normal. A warning siren blares from several megaphones on the roof of a building. When there's a siren, we go to our bomb shelter. Nirit's wife, Einit. I'm a mum of four. I'm married to Nirit. The kid's bedroom was in the bomb shelter. We made sure it looked nothing like a bomb shelter. It was a cozy, loving room. Nirit, we shut the bomb shelter door and window and waited. Vapor trails in the sky above the trees.
All over Kibbutz Be'eri, residents leave their beds and move to their bomb shelters.
Emily, Hila was the first one to be woken up. I was the last because it's not easy to wake me. Hila smiles and says, Emily didn't hear a thing. She carried on sleeping. Then I woke her up to move to the bomb shelter.
Hila's next door neighbors at number 84 are a school teacher and her husband, a car mechanic.
Maol, a teacher. Our household was me, my husband Noy, and the kids, our three cute kids. She smiles fondly. Home movie footage of the kids sitting on a porch and playing with a bubble gun, then a beaming Noy giving their youngest child a playful tickle under the arm. Maol, we're in the bomb shelter, which doubled as the kids' bedroom. We just waited. We had no idea what was happening.
The dirt road along the northern perimeter of the kibbutz leads straight to the Gaza border.
Former print worker Gal, I hear a motorcycle. I live by the kibbutz fence, and as I look over, I suddenly see two guys in camouflage. CCTV of the motorcycle pulling up to the fence. I knew right away they were Hamas terrorists. I call Rachelli, our security coordinator. Rachelli, did I just see some terrorists on a motorbike, Hamas guys? Are you kidding me? Rachelli, I said, are you kidding me? No way, how can Hamas be here? 6:55 a.m., an armed Hamas fighter in camouflage crosses the road behind the kibbutz's main gate and enters the night watchman's booth.
Three young men from the Nova Dance Festival arrive at the kibbutz main gate. seeking shelter from the missile attack.
A car stops and the gate begins to slide open. As it does, a gunman runs from the roadside behind the car and fires into it, blasting out the windows on the far side. The second gunman advances through the open gate, followed by the first, who tilts down the security camera, capturing the scene.
The advance party of two Hamas gunmen is now in the kibbutz, looking for their next kill.
The car drifts through the gate and onto the footpath. Kibbutz print worker Sahar says, at 6:55, the first response team is called to a possible incursion. I left the house, I don't have a weapon at home. I put on my body armor. Our job is to contain the incident until the army comes to deal with it. Kibbutz print worker Yair says, we're a group of friends who get together once a year to do a bit of training. Half the response team guys didn't have guns at home.
Our first response team, they have a gun store with automatic weapons. The leader, Eric Kronig, was shot, ambushed, on the way to open up the armory to give out the guns.
A pickup truck bumps against a lamppost with glass crumbling in its side window. 7:02 a.m. The armory was locked and no one could open it, so the response team were left defenseless.
Hunkered down in their bomb shelters, families begin to share information.
Around 7:15, the WhatsApp messages started coming in. There's a worry about terrorists infiltrating the kibbutz. We should stay in our shelters, close the doors. Noy held onto the bomb shelter door handle as the doors don't lock. Kibbutz farm manager Avida says, warnings are coming in via WhatsApp that there are terrorists in the community. We're all sitting in the bomb shelter waiting. My wife Dana and 13-year-old daughter Hadar and Carmel, who's 15. A teenage boy with curly brown hair and braces. He brings some knives into the shelter and says, Dad, we'll slaughter them. He's just a kid. You can't lock the bomb shelter door. Carmel and I hold the door shut with all our might. Gardener Shlomi closes the door and turns the handle.
The doors don't lock because the doors are made for missiles attack. So in case somebody has to come and rescue us, someone from outside can come and help. They're not made in thought of a terrorist attack.
The two gunmen walk across a paved area with benches and patio chairs.
With their leader gunned down in the opening minutes of the attack, the first response team is down to 10 men. They will be Kibbutz Be'eri's only defense until the Israeli army arrives.
We go to the armory, and of course, no one's there. So we go to the kibbutz gate to wait for the army. We see the blue Mazda. Inside are three civilians. All three have been shot, lifeless. Peering inside the car on the footpath. That's when the penny dropped. You go from a chilled Friday, and in a heartbeat on Saturday you're at war. Just like that. Hamas dashcam shows smoke up ahead, and someone says, there's Be'eri. One day in October. One day in October, handheld footage filmed by someone running along a road towards burning buildings.
3 miles from Gaza, Kibbutz Be'eri is under attack. By the end of the day, more than 1 in 10 of its 1,200 residents will be killed or taken hostage. Gunmen from Gaza have broken through the perimeter fence with a digger. Now they're moving from house to house.
Get in from that side. Get them. Tom.
In the bomb shelter, you were like a caged rabbit. You're terrified. Emily? She spent the night at Hilaz. She's an 8-year-old without her father there, without her mother there. You could hear all the gunfire, could smell houses burning. I realised if I stepped foot out of the house, I would be dead. I would not make it. So I couldn't protect Emily that day.
I should have just stayed at home. No doubt about it. An older girl, Hilla, says, Emily was there without her family. I kept trying to explain what was going on. I said, there's no way they'll come to ours out of all the houses in the kibbutz. Security footage of gunmen in different buildings. Mal says, messages are pouring in about intruders in the kibbutz. It sounds like there are loads of them scattered throughout the kibbutz, not just in one neighborhood. Toys in a front yard and bullet holes in a shelter door. Noy shut the door a little more firmly this time. He also made sure the front door was locked. Then he ran to get his pistol from the gun safe. Noy was a very calm person. He really wasn't worried. We had the pistol, so we felt safe.
You could see the WhatsApp messages. They're attacking my house. And then they're in my house. They're setting light to my house.
Flames at a window.
Where's the army? Where's the army?
The kibbutz is undefended, except for the first response team of 11 volunteers. Two have already been killed.
Response team member Yair says, it's around 7:30. We're being drawn towards more and more gunfire. I call Rakeli. Rakeli, where's the army? On their way. The army are on their way. Where is the army? They're on their way. They're on their way. Rakeli says, it's my job to liaise between the army and the kibbutz. I was calling the army non-stop. There are dead and wounded people and no army. No problem, we're... No problem. I have wounded. People killed in the kibbutz, do you understand? Killed. We were begging, but the army didn't come. Yair adds, we're on our own. Walking through the kibbutz, he says, we get into a fight going this way. We're overwhelmed. A grenade is lobbed our way. I remember looking down and saying, shit. I'm hit by shrapnel in my legs and groin. Then a bullet hits me. I'm shot. I raise my head and see that they're up on the roofs. There are terrorists everywhere, and I realize that we're in serious trouble. Even today, I get flashbacks of Huggy's screams. He was here with us and was shot.
Response team member Huggy is shot through the chest, 200 meters from his home.
Huggy's wife, Adi, says, we're in the bomb shelter. Huggy called me. He said he'd been hit. He can't breathe. She raises her hand to her mouth, her eyes red with tears. He says he loves me. He loves the kids. And we mustn't leave the bomb shelter. Eight minutes later, I called Huggy again. He picked up, but he couldn't speak anymore. She pauses, looks down and swallows. So it was my turn to say my goodbyes. I hope he heard something. Yair says, I'm drenched in blood. I realize I can't fight anymore, and I run towards the dental surgery.
Yair collapses in the dental surgery next to two of his response team comrades. One wounded, one dead.
Blood on a white-tiled floor. Then kibbutz nurse Nirit says, I'm in the dental surgery. It was around 8 a.m. So much happened in half an hour. It was crazy. Yair arrives, covered in blood. We take his trousers off to get a better look. He's screaming, that hurts. A photo of Yair lying on his back. He's pretty badly injured. While I'm treating the wounded, we hear gunfire and explosions close by. What's going on? We kept waiting to be rescued. Amit Mann, the kibbutz paramedic, is calling the emergency services. I'm Amit, a paramedic, and I just want to know if you have any idea when we'll be rescued. We have no way of getting to you. There are terrorists all along that road. Do you understand? There's no way. I hear the calls and it's clear the emergency services are not coming. Rakeli, we're in the back office. They're shooting at us. Please come quick. I'm sending help. Quick. I can't tell people we're on our own because if I tell them that, they won't be able to hold on. So I keep telling them the army will be here really soon. Rakeli wipes her eye. But in fact, no one is coming.
An hour into the attack, the handful of residents defending Kibbutz Be'eri are still on their own.
Kibbutz response team member Alam says, to begin with, we had 11 response team guys available. By now, 5 have been shot, 3 are dead. Then it was just us against hundreds of terrorists. Thousands more poured into the border zone. Hamas dashcam at 8:01 a.m. Oh, how beautiful the road is. It's time for the nation of jihad. They won't know what's hit them. It will take them an hour to come to their senses. Smoke drifts from a fenced-off area on the right. There's Berry. Come on, I swear to God, we'll slaughter them. I want to live stream this. I want a live broadcast. We've got to show the folks back home. They'll come and join us. More people will come. We're live streaming this, no worries. Right now, we can see loads of terrorists in pickups. They've got guns and weaponry. There's a crazy amount of them. Pickup trucks speeding along the road, past a fence topped with razor wire. Response team member Saar says, I stayed at the main gate, convinced the army would arrive. And about 50 meters away, I see 5 to 10 pickups full of men armed with RPGs. Footage from inside a moving truck of assault rifles aimed through the fence into the kibbutz. A lone man in body armor stands at a crossroads inside the kibbutz. I hear loads of explosions, not just small arms fire, so I hide behind a bush at the kibbutz gate. I'm just waiting for the army to come, waiting and praying for them to come. 8:03 a.m., armed men riding motorbikes.
Instead of the Israeli army, more gunmen from Gaza.
They pull to a halt at the crossroads. Some gunmen get off their bikes and one peers into the stationary blue car on the footpath. Saar says, I'm behind the bushes. And all this time, I don't have a weapon. I have no way to fight back. Am I supposed to throw stones at them? Then I get up and sprint for my life back towards the trees. Security footage shows Saar jogging through a yard of farm machinery. From where I'm hiding, I can already see that Berry is engulfed in smoke. Rakeli says, at 8 a.m., the first messages about murder and kidnapping started pouring in. Deal with her. A woman is frog-marched along a road by two younger men. Come on, bitch. Send us cars, another jeep or two. All of our cars are gone. A voice on the radio asks, Ibrahim, where do you want the vehicles? Guys, break into the houses, all of them. There are people inside.
As the attackers kill and kidnap their neighbors, farm manager Avida, his wife and two teenage children, are trapped in their bomb shelter with a door that doesn't lock.
Avida says, "My son Carmel and I are holding the door shut with all our might. Around 8:30, suddenly we feel that someone's trying to get in. We hang on with all our strength. I will not let this door be opened. If the door opens, we die." They start firing wildly. Bullets punch through the door. Carmel's arms are shot to shreds. Blood spurts everywhere. I know I'm next. I just know it. The next burst tore my right leg to pieces. Then my left leg is hit. No one's holding the door now. They shot the door hinge. That's why they couldn't get in. Now Hadar is calling everyone. They're butchering us. Come quickly. Dad and Carmel are hurt. Please get help as fast as possible. Please. Come now. 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 Throughout all of this, they're hammering on the doors and windows like wild beasts. We love you so much. Bye. To hell with Israel. First they shot us, then they tried to burn us out. They've set fire to the house. We need help. We're dying. Help. They're burning us out. We can't cope. They're burning us out. We couldn't breathe anymore. We're trying to stay alive. Come, please, help us, help us. Hadar, Dana and Carmel had to pee, and I told them, okay, each of you take a pot, put a towel in it and pee on the towel so no one can hear you. We took this towel soaked in blood and urine and put it on our faces to filter the smoke so we could breathe. You realize that everything around you is burning and you hear your neighbors being murdered. Just horror. Horror. One day in October.
This was a surprise attack on Israel by the militant Palestinian group Hamas.
A morning that has erupted into violence. Hamas says its operation has only just started, while Israel has declared a state of readiness for war.
A man fires a rocket into a moving car, sending it crashing to a halt, and torches are shone around a dark room. Around 9 a.m, we realized something much bigger was going on. We got messages. In live stream footage, a gunman shoots a dog. We realize this is happening in other kibbutzes. There are terrorists all over the Gaza border area. They're murdering women and children. They're burning homes. A man in a green headband holds a lighter to cloths hanging in a front window. Kibbutz response team member Sahar says, they cut off the road to Kibbutz Beri. They put armed pickups on the junctions with Route 232 so the army couldn't get here and stop this massacre.
Dozens of gunmen prowl the kibbutz, looking for Israelis to kill or take to Gaza.
8:58 a.m., a gate slides open and soldiers advance through in single file.
2 hours into the attack, the first Israeli soldiers arrive by helicopter. Just 14 men.
I run to meet them. Me and the unit meet Elam. Kibbutz response team member Elam says, I'm trying to lead them into the kibbutz. We come under heavy fire. The gunfire hits a soldier. The troops decide to pull out to evacuate their wounded. A soldier carries another slung over his shoulders. Saar says, that unit is not fighting or rescuing people anymore. They evacuate their own wounded instead of civilians. A golf cart pulls a trailer with three men in it heading for the gate. We take a golf cart and pick up their casualties. We hide until we see the helicopter land. The shadow of a helicopter passes over the ground. I help them load the wounded onto an IDF helicopter, which I don't feel great about. My wife and two children are under siege at home. I don't even know if they're safe. That's when I understood the army wasn't going to save us. Dust swirls in the wind from the helicopter, and Rikeli says, that's how it went on for hours, just hours and hours. 10:08 a.m., 3 hours into the attack, a gunman drags a body out of the blue car near the main gate. The other two young men from the car are sprawled lifelessly nearby. The gunman kicks a Corbett out of the way and closes the car's rear door, then gets in the front and it drives away. Other gunmen spread out on foot. Alam says, more and more terrorists are flooding in. Your community is engulfed in mass murder. You feel helpless. Two men, one holding an assault rifle, pick up the young man whose body's been left lying in the road and load him into the back of a 4x4. People of various ages hurry through a gate, some armed, some not, and one bearded man walking with two crutches. Elderly people with walkers came into our kibbutz. They came to loot. A young man covers his face as he pokes out a security camera with a knife. A gunman rides a scooter and is told, come on man, be careful. I received thousands of phone calls. I hear the dying breaths of my best friends. I hear friends being kidnapped. Barefoot women in shorts and t-shirts are hustled along a road, and a man shouts, there's the jeep, go to it. A good friend of mine, they took her to the kibbutz fence and murdered her. No, the jeep's gone. Alam says, they took more hostages than they knew what to do with. They just killed them right there in the street. It's awful, awful. Family photos on a fridge, then Tom.
I couldn't speak to Emily. Phone completely dead. No electricity in the house. Just hoping she'd be one of the lucky houses.
A boarded up house.
Just after 12 noon, men from Gaza reach number 83, where Tom's 8-year-old daughter Emily had gone to stay with a friend.
Emily says, when they arrived, we just opened up, because if we held the door, they'd shoot and the bullets would hit us. So we just opened the door. Raya says, there were about 5 to 7 terrorists. Emily adds, they threatened us with a knife. If we resist, they'll kill us. They grabbed me by the shirt and said, you're coming to Gaza. She demonstrates by yanking her daughter Hila's t-shirt around the shoulder, and Hila smiles faintly. We saw corpses everywhere. They took a car and shoved the three of us in the back. Me, Hila and Raya were in the back. We were like this. Emily ducks her head forwards. Later, they put a blanket over us so that we won't see and maybe run away, so we won't know the way back. Hila says, Emily kept asking what they were saying, where they were taking us. She was terrified. They took us through the fence towards Gaza. Tire tracks and trodden mud on a road winding across level countryside.
As Emily, Hila and Raya are being kidnapped, their neighbours Mahol and Noy prepare their children for the worst.
Mahol says, I'd already told the kids that bad people are in the kibbutz and maybe they'll try to break in. And they were very quiet. They just listened. We heard them come in the house. They tried to open the door. I'm calling for help. I've got people outside the door. Someone's in the house trying to open the door. Noy held the handle. They didn't manage to get in and they left. And of course, Noy went out to see what's up. They'd stolen money from the children's piggy bank. They just looted the house. A man rides a motorbike with a flat-screen TV on the back and its lead trailing behind.
It's now 4 hours since farm manager Avida and his teenage son Carmel were shot through the steel door of their bomb shelter.
My wife is lying on my left side, spooning me, and suddenly we hear two shots. My wife Dana groans in pain. I'm struggling to breathe. Our daughter tries to clean her up as she's dying. She's cleaning Dana. Dana tells her, Adar, it's over. This is the end. And she dies. She dies quickly. Bullet holes on a white wall and around a window. Bloodstains on a mattress, on blankets crumpled on the floor and a cupboard door. Another mattress has been propped against the wall with more bullet holes above it. A photo of 15-year-old Carmel smiling. And I say to Hadar, it's all about Carmel now, only Carmel. All we care about is keeping Carmel alive, only him. Carmel, stay with us. Don't close your eyes. Dad is breathing, but we have to get help. The dental surgery, with cars parked outside.
Three members of the first response team are cornered in the dental surgery with the kibbutz nurse, a doctor, and a paramedic.
Bloodstains, broken boards, pictures, and other debris littering a corridor. Kibbutz response team member Yair says, blood is now pouring out of me. They'd completely surrounded the dental surgery. Kibbutz nurse Nurit says, people are calling me all day, asking for medical advice. I get a call from my best friend, Sandra. She tells me they've been shot through the door of their shelter as she was holding Mila, a nine-month-old baby. A bullet hit her in the head, and she died in Sandra's arms. I remember after the call with Sandra, I sit down next to Yaya. I say, Yaya, we're going to die today. We're unlikely to survive this day, and I can't help my family. I was covered in blood, sick, and Yaya's piss. And I felt I needed a second, some air, to find the right words to say goodbye to my family. Nurit sits in silence for a moment, then says, so I got up and went into the toilet. And I start saying goodbye to my family. One day in October.
Surrounded by Hamas gunmen, three defenders and three medics are trapped in Kibbutz Be'eri's dental surgery.
Nurit, I'm in the toilet cubicle. I remember sitting on the floor, just saying goodbye. Nadavi, my hero, Mum loves you more than anything. I'm proud of you for who you are. You're a good friend. You're the loveliest son there is. Mum loves you. Hold tight, my love. Hold tight. I love you a lot. So much. Nurit trembles and her lip quivers as she takes a moment. Eyelid, I realize that she's petrified and that she's about to die. Otherwise, I wouldn't have played her messages to the children. I played the messages and asked them to reply. Something, not goodbye, but something. Take care of yourself. Please, we love you. Don't worry about the picture of Ofri. It's just a bum. A photo of Ofri with her backside sticking out from under a bed. Nurit's hand shakes as she wipes her eye. 1:14 p.m., 6 hours into the attack, armed soldiers walk through the main gate. Alam, a special forces unit turns up. I take them to the areas where I think they're needed the most. Sa'ar, it struck me that there were too few of them. These 25 guys are really not enough. They're too little and definitely too late. A thick cloud of black smoke rises from one of the burning buildings. We got a message that special forces had reached the kibbutz, but in the end, it didn't really help. These damned terrorists divided the kibbutz into four sectors. They took up strategic positions on rooftops and balconies, and they conquered us. Nirit, meanwhile at the dental surgery, I'm in the toilet. I hear gunfire. I hear Amit scream, I'm hit, please, I don't want to die. Yair, Amit was on the phone to her sister at the time. Shakar, Shakar, please, 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 let it stop. They're here. Yair, then I didn't hear her voice anymore. They started throwing grenades. The grenades killed Shakar and Daniel Levy, the doctor who was with us. There was green smoke everywhere. Then they fired through the window and hit Eitan. At this point, I hear a lot of people speaking Arabic. They're inside the dental surgery. They're walking next to me. I can sense him really close to my legs. I play dead and I don't move. I was taught in the army to push my tongue like this, hard into my gums so as not to make a sound, and I don't move. Yair says, I hear them talking and walking around. Then he takes a deep breath. Nirit, I heard the terrorist's footsteps. I could hear him breathe. A sign on the toilet door. I'm sitting in the toilet cubicle, terrified, and I think, this is the end. I remember closing my eyes, just waiting for the moment. Nirit takes a deep, calming breath, then slowly opens her eyes.
A stone's throw from the dental surgery at number 84, Mahol's husband Noy has been holding the bomb shelter door closed for 7 hours.
Mahol, when they came in again, they went straight to the bomb shelter and tried to open the door. Noy gripped the door handle. We talked about his pistol being the last resort. I managed to record a message to our families. Please come and get us, please. I don't know how long we can last here. Then there was a gunshot. Noy was hit in the leg. They're shooting outside our bomb shelter. Help, help. They fired again. He was hit in the arm. Behind me, my three kids start screaming. Noy stood for a moment in front of the door. Then he took another bullet in the stomach. He slowly, slowly falls to the floor, and as he's falling, I reach out and grab the pistol. And I just start shooting. Help, please help. I fired. I haven't got a clue what I'm doing, but I'm just trying. A few seconds later, they yank the door handle again, and I shoot again. Noi is badly wounded. I've run out of ammunition. I don't know what to do. I'm at number 84, facing the playground. Quick, quick. I'm looking at the gun and I'm like, that's no use anymore. Then there's these little noises. I think they're setting fire to something. There's smoke inside the bomb shelter. They're burning us out. We can smell smoke. The children are still screaming. There's smoke in the house. It's hard to breathe. We can't breathe here. There's lots of smoke and we can't get out. Please, can someone help? They're trying to break in again. Now we're in the dark. In the dark. I really need help. Please send the army. Noi is bleeding out. Noi is losing a lot of blood, a lot. Please, please come. I need help. He's been hit 3 times.
Noi.
It became obvious that he was no longer with me. Bullet holes in the shelter walls. The kids understood. They saw him get shot and fall. They saw all the blood. Mahol stares off into space. Footage from a security camera of uniformed soldiers moving through the kibbutz, then a massive crater-like burn mark on the wall of a building. Avida, we're in the bomb shelter. They've shot Kamel. I'm wounded and bleeding. Dana's dead. Of course, no one can come and help because they die trying. Adar is calling everyone she can to get help quickly, as we're about to die. Okay, Adas, we're with you. Hello? Okay, fine, okay. Where are the gunshot wounds? Do they start from the pelvis or from the legs down? From the legs down. Okay, so I'd like you to please take some kind of shirt or towel and find a small stick of some sort. I can't, I have no way. What? I can't get up. I don't have... 3:06 p.m., 8 hours into the attack, more soldiers enter the kibbutz through the main gate. Suddenly, I see more soldiers arriving. At this stage, special forces are advancing through the kibbutz, which is swamped with terrorists. The soldiers are starting to evacuate people. We pass through families' homes, loads of our people dead, scattered everywhere. It feels like the end of the world. The end of the world. From a drone's aerial footage, clouds of smoke rise up from burning buildings. One day in October. We're moving forward. We reach a house with a family inside, the Shosh family, Mahol and Noi. Mahol says, after Noi was shot, a really long gun battle begins. They're knocking on my door. I can't leave the kids. A never-ending gun battle. They're shooting again. There's gunfire. Gunfire. Elam says, the unit I was with advances towards the houses. The soldiers spot a terrorist at a window. They shoot and kill him. The soldier's dead body. I hear Hebrew voices in the house. She opens the door. Her nightdress is covered in Noi's blood. She's distraught. The kids don't make a sound, which is unexpected. We take them out through the bedroom. All semblance of family life has been destroyed. blood smeared on the floor of a child's bedroom, and bullet holes in the door. Bunk beds, stuffed toys, and an open window beyond. Luckily, we managed to get out alive. But it was pure luck. Nurit says they'd been in the dental surgery for 2 hours, talking in Arabic, shouting, firing. I'm sitting in the toilet, every muscle frozen. After a couple of hours, the terrorists just left. Suddenly I hear, IDF, IDF, anyone alive in here? I open the toilet door and shout, I'm a civilian, please don't shoot. I stare at the soldier in shock, then I see Yaya. I saw Nurit in front of me. I couldn't believe she was alive. We just hug, tight, so tight. And I see Amit, leaning against a wall, sitting. The lifeless, bloody face of a young woman. Then a brief glimpse of video footage in which she's alive and well. Grief-stricken, Nurit closes her eyes and breathes out sharply. She hangs her head for a moment, then recovers her composure.
It's like I'm still there, you know.
IDF troops, their weapons held ready, advancing along a path. Rakeli says, I do know that there were whole neighborhoods we couldn't reach. Impossible to reach. Impossible. A soldier kneeling in a doorway and an armored vehicle passing on a street. It's about 4:30 in the afternoon. A photo of Avida's young son. Carmel realizes he's not going to make it, and he says, Dad, when you bury me, please bury me with my surfboard. Carmel breathes his last short breaths. And I say to my daughter, Hadar, listen, Carmel's in a good place. Nothing can hurt him anymore. Mum's in great shape. Nothing can hurt her. It's just the two of us now. And she says, Dad, don't leave me. And I tell her, of course I won't leave you. How can I leave you? But deep inside, I know that soon I could join Dana and Carmel. I feel it coming. I've lost a lot of blood. I'm dying. But no one can reach us to help us. No one comes. Aerial footage captures rows of smoking buildings. Elam says, there are terrorists everywhere. We continue to fight. Soldiers taking cover behind parked cars. And tanks start moving in. A tank fires its main gun. The roof of a residential building ablaze.
Just before dusk, a large group of Hamas gunmen is surrounded in house 424. They're holding a dozen hostages, including the parents of Saar, a member of the kibbutz first response team.
Saar says, we went to see what's going on, return fire and eliminate the enemy. There were more than 50 terrorists. The house is surrounded. The terrorists are firing. The army is firing. And the tank had already arrived. I had no idea my parents were at the house at the exact same time and that they were in this hell. Saar's mother says, we're outside, there's gunfire everywhere. Adi and I are spooning. I'm hugging him from behind. Then the terrorists fired an RPG. I remember I flew back from the impact. Then the tank fired. Suddenly a boom. I realized that an Israeli tank is shelling us and I'm in the line of fire. And then the second shell. And I see Adi's artery has a hole in it this size. What I understand is there won't be any more days together. Adi was murdered in my arms.
The firefight continues, and the Israeli tank fires several more shells into House 424. By nightfall, everyone in the house is dead, Hamas gunmen and Israeli hostages, except Saar's mother.
I don't know how long I was lying there. Next thing I know, they're evacuating us. I saw that she was alive. Alive. We didn't talk. I think we just cried. We didn't talk. Nirit, six soldiers make a circle around me, and we're being evacuated. But Anat and the kids are still at home. My family is still inside this inferno. I'm not leaving without them. And so the soldiers take me back in. Nirit closes her eyes again. The feeling of seeing your family alive. Having thought I'd never see them again. Anat says, when they arrived, it was amazing. She hugs me and she's shaking. That's it. And very quickly, you're back in the war. I tell the kids we're leaving the kibbutz now. There are so many stories of people murdered 20 minutes before the soldiers arrived. Literally, a matter of a few seconds. Civilians escorted by soldiers.
At 11:30 at night, I'm rescued. Still heavy, heavy gunfire going all over the place. The kibbutz. Three statements, they said. We found Emily. She's in the kibbutz. She was found in the kibbutz and she's been found dead. I'll tell you, I was relieved. We've been hearing that people are being taken to Gaza as hostages, and that is the one thing I did not want for her. So if she was dead, as reported, yeah, she was at peace. So I was at peace.
One day in October.
Emily? Wow. For 30 days, you still have it in your heart and your mind that she's dead. 30 days afterwards, I'm on my way to a ceremony remembering the dead and the hostages, and a neighbour came up and said somebody saw Raya and Hila and Emily being led away by the Hamas terrorists. So at that point, I've gone in to the worst nightmare that I thought I'd avoided. They held her captive there for 50 days. Hamas handed her over to the Red Cross, the Red Cross to the army, and then the army to me. She's 9 years old now. She had her birthday in Gaza. Thank God they did not lay a hand on her. They didn't hit her. They didn't touch her. Psychiatrists have told me I can't investigate or interrogate, which makes sense. I only get to know whatever little snippets come out. Like last night in the car, she just told me that she saw at least 12 dead bodies at the fence. People that she knows dead at the side of the roads.
Badly damaged buildings.
We used to be a kibbutz of about 1,200 members. We lost 100 people, almost 10% of our community. Dead, wiped out.
26 Israelis were taken alive from Kibbutz Be'eri to Gaza. 5 were later murdered by their captors. 18 were released alive. 3 are still being held hostage.
We're hoping for the rest. We have to get them back.
The bomb shelters became death traps. 2 coffins draped with the Israeli flag, and one of them with a surfboard on top. Avida says the government completely failed us. The army, the air force, were useless. We were abandoned for 12 hours. And no one helped us. Basically, they slaughtered us one by one.
We had people from Gaza working on our kibbutz till the 7th of October. They were friends. We would do whatever we could for them. People that needed medical treatment in our hospitals. People would go in their own time with their own car, pick them up, bring them to the hospitals, wait for them, bring them back, you know, shake hands, hug. The whole business. They were your neighbours.
Rachele explains, we really believed we could live in peace with them, not anymore. Avida, Israel has existed for 75 years. I'm not sure we'll make it to 100. It's them or us. It had better be us. Otherwise, we've no right to exist here. Saar says, I think we need very brave leaders on both sides, not just our side, on their side too, to find a solution for this endless conflict. I'm optimistic. Peace is always possible between two nations. Nuret, how do you explain to your kids that there are people on the other side of the fence whose sole purpose in life is to kill us and obliterate the Jewish state? Wipe out the Jews. How can you explain that to your children? Adi says, I'm much more skeptical about my children's future in Israel, or even if they have a future as Jews in the world. And of course, I'm much less happy. I'm a person who's just sad and broken. More gutted buildings. Mahol, I don't know if I will return to Be'eri. I don't think I can put my children in a bomb shelter again and wait for something to happen, for someone to come in. I don't think we could go through this again. Anat, when you're at the print press, you can see Gaza clearly. The first time I went back, I remember looking down the road. Usually, you'd see the sky and buildings, but now there was no sky, just a black cloud. That's when I understood what war is. I understood what we're probably doing to them. It upset me for a moment, but when I think about what they did to us, that feeling goes away. Close to 1,200 Israelis were killed in the October 7th attacks. 364 died at the Nova Dance Festival. A field of makeshift photographic memorials. Gaza. The counterattack against Hamas has so far cost the lives of 41,000 Gazans. An Israeli Defense Force inquiry into the attack on Kibbutz Be'eri found that the IDF failed in its mission to protect the residents of Kibbutz Be'eri. A few residents have now returned. The printing press is working again at full capacity.
If Emily isn't too afraid to go back to where she was kidnapped, if she's not afraid of that, then yeah, we're going back. If the people of the South don't go back to the South, Hamas has won. And that's not going to happen. I'm going back.